The next speaker on this mini-series of 3 is Matthew Jukes. Please come forward.
Hi there, everybody. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you on what I think is a fascinating conference topic. I've really enjoyed the sort of general theoretical discussions that we've had this morning. I'm going to focus now on quite a specific application, perhaps, of what we've been talking about. I've called the talk Rationality and Sexual Decision Making, although one of the useful things about our discussion this morning is I find that not everybody has the same idea of rationality as that I do, and in fact, not most people have different ideas of everything than I do, it seems. But I'll come to define what I mean by rationality in a little bit. But I'm going to talk about some pilot results and pilot thinking, really, about health HIV prevention education project that we're doing in Western Kenya, the case study in school. This is the starting point, really, for our work. That most HIV prevention work in Africa has not been greatly successful. All over the world, it doesn't have a great track record, but in Africa particularly so. This, if I can project my voice for a minute, this graph shows the targets of various interventions. So targets to increase knowledge have been quite successful. 10 out of 11 have produced positive results. But when you actually move it across, you come to intentions to act and the actual actions themselves. Fewer projects have tried to alter them and fewer have been successful. The black shading shows the number that have been successful. So our approach really has been not to particularly to understand if it works, but more to look into the process of how it works. What is the thinking that underlines sexual behaviour? I'm going to use this as the dominant model in the area of behaviour change, which I don't necessarily subscribe to, but I'll use as a framework to present the talk. It's the theory of planned behaviour. So the basic idea is that your behaviour is determined to a large extent by intentions you have towards that behaviour. And in turn, the intentions are formed by some sort of contemplation, deliberation on a number of factors. And what this model proposes is the most important is, firstly, your attitude towards the behaviour. This includes whether you understand that, for instance, in the case of sexual behaviour, that HIV, how HIV is transmitted, whether or not you want to avoid HIV. The second factor is subjective norms, which is a measure of what other people around you think, what your peer pressure, what your family think, and whether you want to comply with those the wishes of your peers. And the final late addition to the model is perceived behavioural control. The idea being that if you wish to perform a certain behaviour but you feel like you don't have control over it, then you're less likely to perform it. I think that the scientific mind comes into this model in two ways, at least two ways, but the ones that are most obvious to me are, firstly, the way that you form knowledge about HIV, particularly the way you infer it from what you see happening around you, is a particularly scientific thought process. But in the second aspect, really the one I want to focus on, is the whole rationality of this model, that this model assumes. This is the definition of rationality that I'm using. that rational thinking leads to the answer that is most likely to be correct given the knowledge one has. If you don't like that definition, look at the definition rather than the word rationality, because this is what I mean by it. And then in the context of sexual behaviour, the second definition is more relevant. A rational action is one that, given the person's knowledge, is most likely to meet the person's goal. So that if a person's goal is to avoid HIV infection, and they know that HIV is sexually transmitted, then unprotected sex may be seen as irrational, a non-rational action in that context. So I'll just briefly present the study. It was, as I say, a pilot study. It was conducted with children in grades 6 and 7 in primary school in Kenya near the Ugandan border. Children were aged between about 11 and 18. This is a primary school in the area. And this is a poor child being subjected to some psychological testing. And when children aren't being subjected to such testing, they're generally quite happy and active people. So what I'm going to do is just present, there are two stages to the project that we've done so far. One was a little sort of background qualitative work, and the second was a quantitative component. So I'm just going to highlight a few quotes that we got from children that I think impact on this issue of rationality. First let me just briefly say that this is a large collaborative effort funded by the James McDonald Foundation and people at the World Bank, Yale University, Harvard, and Pasquinian's at NYU. And since I know that two people are here from Columbia, I must make that correction. People at the University of Nairobi, and it's implemented through a Dutch NGO called ICS. Various people in the Kenyan ministries are involved also. Okay, so here are the quotes from the boys. I'll just read a couple out. God granted me a penis and is expected to do some work. If I do not find a girl after some time, I'll have to jump on a goat. And what these illustrate is, and this is quite a universal thing to come out of these conversations, is that for men, sex is seen as a strong imperative, something almost irresistible. For the girls, it's a different story. This girl is saying, if your stepmother mistreats you and hasn't cooked, now you'll get a boyfriend who will give you money to buy food that you're going to eat. So for a lot of girls, it's a means of getting material wealth that they need. For some, it's this, the essentials of life. For others, it's getting the latest dress or whatever they want to keep up with their friends. And the last aspect I want to mention is that pretty much all the children we speak to understand that HIV is sexually transmitted. But there's this other element to causality, which is this the idea that something ultimately is causing you to commit that sin, as this child says. Within a Christian framework of thinking, it's the devil, but there are also traditional beliefs about witchcraft. Okay, so I'm just highlighting some of the key points from the qualitative work. Now, moving on to the quantitative work, we took quantitative measures of four psychological factors that we thought were relevant. The first one is causal understanding of HIV, which relates to the last quote I showed you. To what extent you believe you have control over your own infection status rather than God having control or other people having control. a measure of life skills, which is a thing that they're taught at school, but something that they would naturally have anyway, is a practical reasoning about situations and how to avoid danger in common situations that they encounter, and attitudes to various cultural aspects. So we related these to their self-reported sexual behaviour. Just briefly, around a third of them said that they already started having sex, and about a third also said that they would were intending not to have sex before they marry, and another third somewhere in between. And this is what the age distribution looks like. When I started working here, I was quite surprised at how young children report having sex, and it seems to be fairly consistent across a few study sites that children as young as 10 and 11 are reporting having made sexual debut. There's a little increase throughout the years, and then 16 and 17, it really takes off for the boys. Okay, so we related these psychological factors to their current sexual activity. And this is the key result that I'm just going to show you one result. So on the y-axis you have the children's score on this practical reasoning task we gave them. And here you have categories of current sexual behavior. So you see for the girls, the ones who are currently having sex have a low score on the skill scale, and the ones who are currently abstinent have not yet started having sex have a high score. So the implication is the higher your level of life skills, the more likely you are to resist the pressure to have sex. But for the boys, there's no such relationship. And I've shown you life skills here. This also works for levels of knowledge and also levels of control. That for girls, give them what you think might be useful, i.e. knowledge, skills, and it seems to have an impact on their behaviour. But for boys, there's no relationship. I won't go into this in graph into detail, but just to say that we also find that when we look at the influence on children's thinking, girls are very much influenced by their communities and what their communities think, but boys aren't. Boys are more or less left to do their own thing. So just to summarise the key points of those results, these cognitions, as I call them here, these psychological factors, predict girls' behaviour better than boys. And the most significant of those was the life skills measure. And the last slide, that schools and communities affect girls' cognitions more than boys. So why we get the sex difference in the relationship is something that I wanted to think about. Explore the idea that perhaps girls are more rational in their sexual decision making than boys are. And there's one experiment that came out last year which I think is interesting, just to illustrate or develop the argument a little. This is a basic paradigm whereby adults are given the option of a certain amount of money now or a larger amount of money later. It's a common paradigm to explore this, the importance that people place on waiting or having things right now. And a lot of work has been done and different brain circuits seem to be involved, sort of emotional limbic system circuits are involved in when you say I want it right now, but the sort of frontal lobe rational thinking seems to be involved when you say no, I'll delay and have a large amount of money. So this experiment was done with boys and girls, but I'll just go through, in fact, men and women, they were adults, so I'll go through the results of the men. So for a given set of parameters, men are able to say, no, I recognise that it will be to my benefit to wait for the larger amount of money. So they run this with them, And then they show them pictures of pretty girls for a while and just ask them to evaluate how pretty they think they are. And then they give them the same task again. The same task, would you have this money now or later? And now you find that more men are suddenly, their blood's up, and they go for the give me the money right now. And the author's explanation for this is that this makes sense in an evolutionary sense, that the costs for men are not the same in procreation as they are for women. So you see something you want now, you may get something better later, but you know, why wait? Let's go for it now. And the fact that there's some transference, because now we're dealing with the question of just money, seems to imply this. The brain seems to be set up to do this. So, in an evolutionary sense, you could say that men are now behaving just as rationally. They spread their genes. But in the sense that most men, in the context of an HIV epidemic, want to remain healthy, then doing this, at least in an unprotected way, is seen as irrational. So the implications, as I said at the beginning, this is the beginning of actually a 5 or 6 year project. So this is just some initial results and really some initial thinking as well. So I don't have a strong conclusion that girls are more rational than boys, but just thinking through if they are. One thing it seems to imply is that girls are easier targets for HIV prevention education, i.e. you give them the information and they will do something with it, whereas boys might be more difficult. But then again, getting the boys' decision-making right may be more crucial. There's certainly some evidence from Uganda, which had the biggest success in fighting the HIV epidemic, that boys, that the key thing was getting the young boys to abstain or delay their initiation of sexual activity. And so maybe it's when we break through the boys' thinking that that something really starts to happen. There are one or two ideas about how to improve the rationality of boys' decision making, as I've defined it here. But I'm hoping a lot more will be generated in the course of the next few days, or at least will spark some thinking, because I think this is a very important example of needing to build the scientific mind. Okay, thank you.
Well,